Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And tonight we're going to return to looking at the Second World War in the Pacific, as we have been doing on and off over the last few months. And we are looking today at the battle for New Guinea, and particularly the Kokoda Trail campaign fought between Japan and Australia. And we're looking again at All Hell Let Loose by Max Hastings, which, I return to this book because having a general World War II reader that's pretty accurate, fairly even-handed, and reasonably well-written is always a good thing. The other one that I dip into from time to time is obviously Anthony Beaver's History of the Second World War, which... probably, for my money, is the better book, but, you know, we are where we are. So, Max Hastings writes of the Kokoda campaign, which was fought at roughly the same time, simultaneously with the Guadalcanal campaign between America and the Japanese and the wider struggle for the Solomon Islands. He writes, "Even as the Marines were fighting on Guadalcanal, the most protracted land campaign of the Far Eastern War was unfolding on Papua New Guinea, after Greenland, the largest island in the world. The Japanese began establishing small forces on the eastern coast on March 1942, with the intention of seizing Port Moresby, the capital of Australian-ruled Papua, 200 miles distant on the southwest shore. Initially, the Japanese intended an amphibious assault, a descent on Moresby. This was frustrated by the Coral Sea actions." Obviously, so the Battle of the Coral Sea, while arguably undecisive, a kind of a draw between both sides, it prevented Japan from further action against Papua New Guinea, and particularly the fall of Port Moresby. And if you look at Port Moresby on the map, it is the southernmost outpost of Australia in Papua New Guinea, and its fall would have presented Australia with a huge vulnerability. Now, as I've said before, the historiography on Japan's intentions towards Australia is pretty decisively being concluded that Japan had no intention of a real land campaign in Australia, an invasion, and saw it, in conquest of the Pacific and the conquest of China, and an advance up to the borders of India as being virtually impossible in terms of manpower. However, The strategic importance of Australia wasn't lost on the Japanese. They were aware that this would be where MacArthur would build up his forces to retake the Pacific and Southeast Asia, and this would be this was the kind of the holdout. So the strategy was more a case of creating a kind of a cordon around Australia and slowly strangling Australia using bombers and submarines and ships all around the along the routes to Australia to cut off any kind of supply lines and trade, and particularly cut off the possibility of American reinforcements landing. However, Australia very quickly became a staging post for Douglas MacArthur's reconquest of the Pacific. American success at Midway a month later denied the Japanese any prospect of a swift capture of New Guinea through seaborne landings. Tokyo's local commander, Colonel Tsuji, made a personal decision instead to secure the island the hard way by the overland advance, and forged an order supposedly from Imperial headquarters to authorise his operation. MacArthur, Allied Commander-in-Chief of the Southwest Pacific, deployed his limited strength to frustrate this. So the overland advance from the north of the island to the south would be down the Kokoda Trail, which was a long perilous journey through the mountains of Papua New Guinea, the Owen Stanley Range. And the Australians, for a significant period, would be fighting a retreating action, a rearguard action, down the trail in sporadic jungle battles, which were ferocious in their intensity, and left on either sides, Japanese and the Australian diggers, injured and wounded soldiers to struggle down the trail. And it would eventually, the trail itself would be what defeated Japan, the resources needed to capture all of the trail and lay siege to Port Moresby led to the essentially half-starved Japanese soldiers laying the siege and not being able to kind of to continue in any meaningful sense. But we'll get to that in a little bit. And the efforts of Australian soldiers to put up the fight that they did do contributed significantly to this state of affairs. Max Hastings writes, Australian units began moving towards Papua's north coast in July 1942, but the Japanese secured footholds there first and began to build up forces for an advance over the Owen Stanley mountain range to Port Moresby. Ensuing battles along its only practicable passage, the Kokoda Trail, was small in scale but a dreadful experience for every participant. Amid dense rainforest, men struggled for footholds, scrambled through deep mud on near vertical tracks, bent under crippling weights of equipment and supplies. Rations arrived erratically, and rain almost daily. Disease and insects intensified the misery, so it was not dissimilar to Guadalcanal in that regard. They were led by General Thomas Blamey. Blamey had been part of the Australian forces in Greece and in Crete. He was widely seen as kind of lazy and incompetent. His private life were raised eyebrows amongst Australian, American, and other British officers, and his love of drink and call girls, particularly. Blamey had been involved in some kind of slightly quasi-fascist organisation in Australia during the 1930s, this sort of right-wing anti-communist grouping. which had kind of, which sort of tapped into kind of this, this Australian white nativism that was there quite prevalent between the wars, and Blamey does not particularly distinguish himself in the Kokoda Trail campaign. I have seen men standing knee-deep in the mud of a narrow mountain track, looking with complete despair at yet another seemingly unsurmountable mountain ridge, an Australian officer wrote to his former school headmaster. Ridge after ridge, ridge after ridge, heartbreaking, hopeless, futile country. The need to manpack all supplies and ammunition rendered the Kokoda Trail campaign a colossal undertaking. Every soldier bore £60, some 100. What a hell of a load to lump uphill, all the way through mud and slush, wrote Australian Corporal Jack Craig. Some of us lose our footing and finish up flat out. One feels like just lying there forever. I don't think I've been so exhausted in all my life. Many soldiers suffered the agonies of jungle and tropical diseases, and the difficulties that came from a poor diet. The Japanese, despite what is often said about their proclivities and their propensities and abilities for jungle warfare during the Pacific campaign, which actually was no greater particularly than any other combatant power, and is really just a kind of a way of kind of orientalizing and mythologizing the Japanese. They suffered immensely along the Kokoda track from malnutrition, from disease, and from the brief but bloody clashes with the Australians. However, for much of the campaign, it was the Japanese that managed to have the upper hand, largely as a result of manpower, Max Hastings writes. The Japanese repulsed the Australians on the Kokoda Trail, then harassed them relentlessly as they retreated with ambushes and outflanking movements. Many stragglers died. Confusion was the keynote, wrote Sergeant Clive Edwards. No one knew exactly what was happening, but when the sounds of battle came from in front, we were told that others were trying to fight their way through. It was pitiful. The rain was coming down, and there was a long string of dog-tired men straining the last nerve to get wounded men down and yet save their own lives too. Bewilderment showed on every face, and as the long line faltered and halted, those at the back became affected and sent messages to keep moving, the Jap is on us. The Australians were eventually pushed back within a few miles of Port Moresby, and it was this long retreat that perhaps unwittingly exhausted the Japanese and drew their supply lines out further than they could possibly go. The Allied position in Papua was preempted. The threat to the Allied position in Papua was preempted through signals intelligence. The ultra decryption system used initially to break German codes revealed a Japanese plan to land at Milne Bay, which was at the southeastern tip of the island. An Australian brigade was shipped there and deployed. When the Japanese landed on the night of the 25th of August, they met fierce resistance.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
On the 4th of September, the survivors were evacuated. Milne Bay is in Australian military history, one of the great defining moments of the Australian Defence Force. The situation in Port Moresby was still very, very serious. MacArthur, commander-in-chief of the South West Pacific, was utterly contemptuous of Australia and the diggers. He believed that all credit in the theatre should go to the Marines, the US Marines, and really tried to belittle the Kokoda Trail campaign as a sideshow, which it certainly was not. Had the Papua New Guinea fallen, it would have been an absolute disaster strategically, not just for Australia, but for MacArthur himself. So he owed the diggers really a debt of gratitude. But a man of such extraordinary vanity and egotism was incapable of making that kind of gesture. He argued, and again, there's no evidence for this being true. He argued that the Australians were poor fighters. But if you look at how Australian soldiers distinguished themselves in North Africa, if you look at how they fought along the Kokoda Trail, if you look at how they fought in the in Malaya, retreating from the Japanese, these were some of the most tenuous and skillful fighters of the Second World War, and you know, military historians in subsequent decades have generally agreed upon this. The other thing that MacArthur was able to demonstrate really was his ignorance of the conditions on the campaign, and his inability to understand what fighting along the trail was like. The Japanese battered the Allied perimeter relentlessly, and a disaster beckoned at Port Moresby. This was averted chiefly by air power. The US Air Force, US Army Air Force bombing of the enemy's overextended supply line created a crisis for the attackers, which worsened when some troops were diverted from New Guinea to Guadalcanal. So there is a relationship between the two campaigns, Guadalcanal and the Kokoda Trail. And trying to fight both campaigns simultaneously was a huge burden for Japan. Now, because of the nature of the war, because Japan, after Pearl Harbor, has essentially bitten off more than they can chew, and the Japan doesn't get to make the sorts of strategic decisions of, do we sacrifice the Kokoda campaign to support the Guadalcanal campaign or vice versa. No, they have to do both at the same time. So they have to hope that they will be lucky, they will be fortunate. And unfortunately, this plays into the hands of their enemies. Max Hastings writes, "The local Japanese commander was ordered to pull back to the north shore of Papua. The Australians found themselves once more struggling up the Kokoda Trail and across the Owen Stanleys, this time pressing a retreating enemy in conditions no less appalling than during the early march. Our troops are fighting in the cold mists of an altitude of 6,700 feet, wrote Australian correspondent George Johnson, fighting viciously because they have only a mile or two to go before they reach the peak of the pass and they will be able to attack downhill. This means a lot of troops who have climbed every inch of that agonising track, who have buried so many of their cobbers, and who have seen so many going back weak with sickness or mauled with mortar bombs and the bullets and grenades of the enemy, men gone from their ranks simply to win back a few hundred yards of this wild and friendly and utterly untamed mountain. The men are bearded to the eyes. Their uniforms are hodgepodges of anything that fits or is warm or affords some protection from the insects. In the green half-light, amid the stink of rotten mud and rotting corpses, with the long line of green-clad Australians climbing wearily along the tunnel of the track, you have a noisome, unforgettable picture of the awful horror of this jungle war." The message that comes through to the Japanese to withdraw from the edges of Port Moresby is a terrible blow to them. They have essentially, the Japanese army in Papua New Guinea has staked everything on besieging Port Moresby till it falls. But the high command in Tokyo looks at the strategic situation and says essentially, we haven't got the resources to break Port Moresby. We must withdraw. Overall, there is a sense that the tide of war throughout 1942 is shifting away from Japan. In the north of Papua New Guinea, at Buna, the Americans stage an amphibious landing, along with and this is supported by Australians. To finally capture, defeat and destroy the Japanese army in early 1943 in Papua New Guinea. Americans who were finally sent up the Kokoda Trail to essentially catch up with the Australians who had harried the Japanese all the way back to the northern shores, discover actually how difficult the trail is. There was one famous case of a party of US soldiers who, having climbed for 8 hours up the side of a mountain, essentially one of them slips and takes the other with them. They all survived, but they slid down the mud and the undergrowth for several hundred feet, winding up at the bottom again and having to commence the whole climb from scratch. It was these sorts of things. This really disproved the myths that MacArthur had come out with. Not that that's particularly difficult. So Max Hastings writes, "Buna was finally taken at the beginning of January 1943, and residual enemy forces in the area were mopped up 3 weeks later. The Japanese had lost almost two-thirds of their 20,000 men committed, while 2,165 Australians and 930 Americans died. Lieutenant General Robert Eichelberger, a US divisional commander, wrote, "It was a sly and sneaky kind of combat, which never resembled the massive and thunderous operations in Europe, where tank battalions were pitted against tank battalions and armies the size of city populations ponderously moved and manoeuvred. In New Guinea, where the rains came, wounded men might drown before their litter bearers found them. Many did. No war is good war, and death ignores geography. But out here, I was convinced, as were my soldiers, that death was pleasanter in the temperate zone. The Papa operations that were characterised by MacArthur's kind of ignorance and arrogance led to a long-standing disdain and bitterness between the Americans and the Australians. And the success at Buna, which was in fairness largely due to the American landings, brought a deep resentment that the Australians felt, you know, and justifiably, that they had been overlooked, the sacrifices had been ignored, and that the Americans came in at the end and claimed victory. The rest of the island was contested and fought over between the Americans, Australians on one side and the Japanese on the other throughout the rest of 1943. And the Japanese on Guadalcanal defeated now decided that as Guadalcanal had been lost, New Guinea had to be the place where the line was drawn and where reinforcements were brought in. But during the Battle of the Bismarck Sea in March 1943, the American 5th Air Force, using once again ultra intelligence, devastated the Japanese convoy and sank 8 transports that and 4 escort destroyers that were bringing reinforcements to Papua New Guinea. And the Pacific was often kind of defined by this ability to throttle off the sea lanes. The Battle of Iron Bottom Sound, which when we talked about Guadalcanal ages ago now, was the last moment where Japan was able to do this sort of thing. And instead, the tables are decisively turned on Japan. So finally, Max Hastings writes, after months of seesaw ground fighting, a decisive breakthrough came when George Kenny, commander of the 5th Air Force, secretly constructed a forward airstrip which his fighters could strike at the main enemy air bases at Wawak. This they did to devastating effect in August 1943, almost destroying Japanese air power in the region. Thereafter, a force that eventually comprised 1 US and 5 Australian divisions launched a major offensive, and by September 1943, the major enemy strongholds had been overrun and 8,000 Japanese survivors were straggling way northwards. The Huon Peninsula was cleared in December and Allied dominance of the campaign became explicit. Ultra revealed the location of the remaining Japanese concentrations, enabling MacArthur to launch a dramatic operation to bypass them and to cut off their escape by landing at Hollandia in Dutch New Guinea on the 22nd of April 1944. Fighting on the island persisted until the end of the war, Australians providing the main Allied effort. Some 13,500 Japanese emerged from the jungle to surrender there in August 1945. So anyway, we're going to finish there. Do remember to check out, visit the Explaining History website, www.explaininghistory.org. There are links there to all the videos I've done over many, many over the years, and some new stuff that's going up at the moment. We've got the Explaining History Facebook group. Come and join us there, and there's always an interesting chat going on about something or other. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and if you can sponsor the podcast on Patreon, it's always gratefully received. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.